and welcome to the podcast. This is Ron's Amazing Stories, where we play tales to take you away from today. And take you away we do.
Oh my gosh!
We have so much stuff that even stuff is jealous.
Did you hear that?
We have a story about a man who uses loopholes and murder to get rich. We answer the question, what about the 5-minute mystery? We have a surprise guest, a story from listener Mitch that is nothing short of amazing, and if that doesn't do it for you, we expose the truth about pages 77 and 78.
Oh yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Honestly, I have no idea how we're going to get all this done, but here we go. I want to say thank you to all of you that responded to the question I asked about what we do now that we have run out of 5-minute mysteries. Folks like Brandy, Michael, Tom, Jim, and many others responded with, please don't quit the 5-minute mysteries. Start them over from the beginning. Well, I have great news. As I indicated, there was a rumor that more of these great old programs existed. It took a bit of digging, and I had to go through some trouble, but I have found 39 more episodes. Now, there was a price to be paid, and, well, you see, I got an email from a guy who knew a guy that was looking for something that I knew another guy had. So I got that guy to give me the stuff that the first guy said that the guy he knew wanted. He set up a meeting with that guy who was a friend of another guy. Is that clear so far? Well, here is what happened. I find myself down on the docks of Fort Vancouver. A heavy fog is rolled in, and it's midnight. The whole place has that spooky vibe going. I take a quick look around and decide to go in. Foggy around here. Can't see a thing. Max, you out there?
Who's wants to know?
It's me, Max, from Ron's Amazing Stories. I heard that you might have...
I don't know nothing about no stories, less than you have proof who you be.
Oh yeah, I forgot. My, nice weather we are having.
Yeah, it's always nice in July.
Yes, the wind is quite pleasant. Can we get on with this? Do you have the 5-minute mysteries? We're not.
I got them. You got the payment?
Yes. 25 issues of Rat Boy and Housefly. Mint condition with original Rat Boy decoder ring.
Fine. Now just one more thing. Not all these FMMs are from transcription. Some of them are, shall we say, live broadcasts.
Live? But you said...
That's the deal. Pray I don't alter it further.
Okay, you have me over a barrel, and if I could see you, I would say I had never better see you again, Max.
Feelings mutual, bub. Patsy.
Well, anyway, after I woke up, I had the 5-minute mysteries, and we are all set to go again. How about that?
Sounds like a lie to me.
Okay, that story may not have exactly happened like that, and I may have hired the great Jim Harold to play the role of Max. Yeah, you do what you gotta do. My thanks to Jim, and I owe you, bud. Jim Harold is not only a friend to Ron's Amazing Stories, he's one of the finest podcasters I know, and if you've not listened to his work, head to jimharold.com and pick a show. Whether it's paranormal or TV shows, Jim has something for everyone. Anyway, the result of all this? Well, here is a new 5-Minute Mystery.
Another 5-Minute Mystery.
This 5-Minute Mystery is being brought to you by Max, the guy who knew a guy that had these 5-Minute Mysteries. Also by JimHerald.com, the place to go if paranormal is normal for you. Need a ghost story? Go to JimHerald.com and prepare to be spookied. Is that a word?
11:30. Sure, Mr. Ronald, hadn't I better make you a cup of chocolate?
No, thanks, Mrs. Bland. Father's working rather late tonight, isn't he?
In that stuffy old library, too. Suspect I'd better pour in a little extra for that butler of yours, Mr. Bowling.
No, Mrs. Bland. Well, you say that makes one think...
Why, what's that?
Oh, sounded like a truck backfiring out of the road.
Oh, no, Mr. Ronald. It was in this house.
A gunshot? Mrs. Bland, come on.
Mr. Ronald, look. There on the floor.
Why, it's Bowling. He's unconscious. Mrs. Bland, turn on the lights. Bowling, old man. Bowling.
Why, he's being struck on the head, Mr. Ronald. Look.
Someone hit me from behind. Mr. Ronald, your father in the library.
Mr. Ronald, quick.
Oh, Mrs. Bland.
Your father. Fallen forward on his desk. Mr. Ronald, is he?
Yes. He's dead. Mrs. Bland, call the police. This is murder. Tell the inspector whatever he wants to know, Bowling. We've got to find out who murdered my father.
Yes, sir. Well, I was locking the front door when I first heard the voices from the library. I was surprised because I didn't know Mr. Sweeting had a visitor, but just as I approached the library door...
Go on, Mr. Bowling.
Well, sir, I heard the shot. For a moment, I was confused. Then I opened the door, and Mr. Sweeting was lying forward over his desk, a bullet wound in his temple. I saw a piece of paper caught in his hand, sir, and then a tingling sensation of fear flashed up my spine. I knew I wasn't alone, sir. I didn't see anyone, but I realized the murderer was there, and it flashed through my mind that he was waiting till he could get hold of that piece of paper.
Did you take it, Bowling?
I did, sir. That is, I slipped it into a book that was on the desk.
But there's no book here on the desk.
You must have taken it after all. I even remember the title of the book, sir. It was The Widow's Walk, and I slipped the paper between pages 77 and 78. But just as I did...
Yes?
The murderer darted out the door behind me. I whirled and ran after him. The next thing I knew, something struck me over the head.
No, Bowling, you're wrong. Hold out your hands. I arrest you for the murder of your employer, Mr. Sweeting.
What was the one clue that told the inspector Bowling was the guilty man? In just a moment, you'll hear the inspector explain. But first...
This one's a puzzler. I didn't see anything pointing to the butler doing it, other than the butler always does it. The story seems okay, but you can never tell about these things. Let's head back and see what's what. This 5-Minute Mystery is being brought to you by ghosts, goblins, and ancient astronauts. All types of stories you'll find at JimHerald.com.
Now, let's see if your talent for detecting is as good as the inspector's.
But how did you know Bowling killed my father, Inspector?
He didn't say anything, far as I can see.
Yes, he did, Mrs. Bland. Striking himself on the head was almost enough to make the whole thing plausible. But he said one thing that told me he was lying. You see, it's impossible to insert anything between pages 77 and 78 in a book, because odd-numbered pages are always on the right, even ones on the left. 77 and 78 are actually the same sheet. It just can't be done.
Okay, I have a book right here in front of me, and I'm going to slip this piece of paper between pages 77 and 78. Oh my gosh, the detective is right. It just can't be done. The butler really did do it. Now that is conclusive proof. This 5-Minute Mystery was brought to you by JimHerald.com, where spooky is as spooky does. Pour a cup of Lipton tea and join your host Raymond for stories that thrill and chill. Inner Sanctum would open the episode with a creaking door and a Lipton tea commercial. In my humble opinion, The Inner Sanctum was one of the best horror and mystery shows in the history of old-time radio. Now, Boris Karloff was a frequent guest, and we feature the man this week in a story called Death for Sale. The tale is about a clever insurance scheme which is delayed by blackmail. So, let's pour a cup of Lipton tea and join Raymond for stories that chill and thrill.
Good evening, friends of the creaking door. This is your host to welcome you once again into the inner sanctum. Come on in for the crime of your life and meet one of the illustrious inmates from our Who's Who. This cadaverous cut-up is Mr. Seymour Blade. His wife had a tiff with him and punctuated it with a kitchen knife through the middle, which is, of course, one way of making your point sting. All right, then, lend a fear now to some grim happenings and hear what kind of profits our star Boris Karloff in the role of Mark Devers reaped when he put up Death for Sale. The ashtray in the reception room is stuffed with half-smoked cigarettes. The disheveled man waiting paces his caged animal steps this way and that. Each second, his eyes dart to the door at the end of the room at the slightest sound. At last, the knob turns. The door swings wide open.
Well, Doctor?
Your wife is in pretty bad shape.
Cora is my wife.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought...
Forget it. Bad shape. But she's going to pull out of it. Right?
Mr. Devers...
She's not going to pull out of it?
Well, it doesn't look as if she will.
What?
There's a chance. Only a very small one, but still a chance.
You're lying. She's going to pull out of it. She's got to.
We're doing everything we can.
Look, even if she has to die... You could pull her out of it for an hour, couldn't you? Just an hour so that she could sign something.
Mr. Devers.
It means everything to me, Doc. You could give her a shot or something, couldn't you?
Good day, Mr. Devers.
I'll give you $5,000.
Good day.
$10,000, Doc, and you fool, you don't understand. You've got to do this for me. You've got to.
Doctor doesn't understand. He'd do the same in my case. So would you. So would anybody. $50,000. I was 1 hour away from $50,000. Money that belongs to me. My money that I waited 7 long years for. And I won't be cheated out of it. 7 long years. It all seemed so simple then. So sure. We had a perfect plan for $50,000, and nothing was going to keep us from it, and nothing did. Up to 3 weeks ago. That was when Cora called me at the office. I just thought she was imagining things again, as she had right along. I told her so, but she said no. This man was watching her night and day.
He is, Mark. He's outside the house right now.
Oh, come now, Cora.
I tell you, he is.
Oh, you're just imagining things again. Why don't you try
I'm not imagining anything. He's right outside the house across the street, and
You'll be positive after 7 years.
I know I've been wrong before, but this time I'm sure Elliot's come back and...
What?
The doorbell just rang.
Who is it? Evelyn?
I suppose so. We're supposed to go to the movies together.
Good idea. Take your mind off believing everyone you see is Elliot Starnes.
You're not coming home, then?
Not till I've finished at the office.
All right, Mark. Suit yourself.
Goodbye, darling. Give my best to Evelyn.
Mark? Oh, all right, I'm coming. I was on the phone, Evelyn.
Aren't you going to ask me in? Of course. After all these years, you've probably forgotten who I am. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Elliot Starnes, your beloved husband.
Elliot, you're supposed to be...
Dead? Yes, I know I'm supposed to be, Cora. But as you can see, I'm very much alive.
I knew it was you this time. I knew it.
I think you better ask me in, don't you? After all, it isn't very often that a husband comes back from the dead.
Back from the dead. That's what he was, all right. And when Cora called me this time, I didn't say I couldn't leave the office. All right, Cora, pull yourself together.
But, Mark, you don't understand.
Oh, yes, I do. You've been scared for the last 7 years, and you're going to go on being scared for the rest of your life.
He wants $5,000 more to disappear again.
Well, I didn't expect him to come back just to say hello. Of course he wants more money.
What are we going to do? He knows that we collect that $50,000 insurance money 3 weeks from now. He says if we don't come through with his five, he'll go straight to the insurance company and...
Oh, don't be a fool. He's in this thing as much as we are. He won't do anything to spoil his chances. All he wants is money.
The longer he's around, the more chance we take that somebody might recognize him. Mark, we can go to jail.
We've waited a long time to get our hands on this money, and I don't expect to be cheated out of it now.
You're going to give him the $5,000?
I don't know. Maybe.
But
you... nothing. When did he say he's coming back?
Tonight. After midnight.
All right. I'll be here. We'll handle Elliot once and for all. And after this time, there won't be any coming back. I guess no matter how carefully you plan, there's always that one small thing you fail somehow to cover. 7 years before, I was sure we'd covered everything. And it was clever. Really clever. The law says that if a body isn't recovered after 7 years' time, a man is declared legally dead. So we found us a body, Cora and I did. We found Elliot Starnes and sold him on death for $5,000.
Sure, I'll do it. I'll marry Cora and then disappear. For $5,000, you can sell me on anything.
He married Cora, and a little while after the policy was issued... his automobile was found at the bottom of Ridgely's Pond. Oh, the police dragged the water for days, but naturally didn't find the body. And the insurance people exercised their right to withhold payment till Elliot was declared legally dead.
I understand, gentlemen. And I don't even care about the money. All I care about is that my poor husband is dead.
It was clever, all right. And Cora put on a good act. We knew we'd cash in while others had failed because we weren't anxious. We were willing to wait for 7 years. And wait we did. It was a perfect plan. Nothing was going to keep us from it. Nothing except... now, Elliot had come back. He swore he'd never return and he'd gone back on his word. But by midnight... I'd made up my mind how to handle Elliot.
No, Mark.
The only way.
No.
The only way. This five that he wants, that's only the beginning. He'll hold us up all his life.
No.
He'll drain us dry of every cent of that $50,000.
I won't let you
yes,
do it.
Yes, you will. We're in this far. You won't back down now.
I've got to. I never dreamed it would turn out like this.
Another few weeks and he'll be legally dead.
There must be another way.
Only this, believe me. And after it's done... it'll be you and me and nobody the wiser. Go on. Open the door for him.
Mark?
Cora, do what I say.
I can't.
You've got to.
All right.
I'll be inside. Tell him everything is set.
Hello.
Hello, Cora. Oh, won't you come in, Elliot? Thank you, my dear. Don't mind if I do. Mark here yet, Cora?
Yes. He's in the living room.
Oh, fine. Then you and Mark have agreed on the deal for me.
Yes, we have. Come in, Elliot. Everything's set.
Though Mark is waiting for Elliot in the, you'll pardon the expression, living room. Whatever happens to Elliot actually serves him right. After all, here in the sanctum, we don't go for live people walking around as if they were ghosts. It's enough to scare the death out of us. Poor Cora is so nervous. She just can't look a corpus delicti in the prima facie. Well, enough grave philosophy. Suppose we let our star, Boris Karloff, take up our stark story where we left off.
Everything was set. I planned to kill Elliot with the knife I held behind me, and I felt absolutely no compunction about it.
Are you... You're joking.
No, Elliot.
You're crazy. Cora, stop him. You'll never get away with it. Mark, no!
I buried him in the back of the house. I say I did, because Cora wasn't much use to anyone that night or for several days afterwards. She got over it, as I knew she would. She got over it when she realized that I was right, that we had gotten away from it. And no one could ever know and no one would miss him. She got over it when I reminded her that in just one more week, we'd be sharing that $50,000.
Just one week.
That's right, Cora.
I've been a lot of trouble to you these past few days. I am sorry.
Oh, forget it. It's all over.
Yes, it is. I'll feel a lot better when the money's actually ours. Somehow, way in the back of my mind, I feel that maybe we won't...
Look, darling, it's as good as ours now. There's nothing left in the way. Not a single thing.
1 week.
That's all. Now, wouldn't you know? You expecting anyone?
No.
Evelyn?
Not at this hour.
Well, whoever it is, get rid of them.
Yes, darling. I'll get rid of them. Yes?
Mrs. Stein?
Yes?
Mrs. Elliot Stein?
That's right.
I want to talk to you. Here's my card.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm busy right now.
Too busy to see me. I can promise you that.
Oh, now, see here.
Nice card, ain't it? Real fancy engraving.
Mrs.
Elliot Stein. That's right. I'm the woman Elliot married after he disappeared 7 years ago. Now, I don't think you're going to be too busy to see me after all. Do you?
Maybe it's fate. Maybe it's all in the cards. You work hard. You think out a plan that's letter perfect. Then up pops the unexpected, forcing you into the first desperate step to lick it. First Elliot Starnes himself, then his second wife that we didn't know existed.
And here's our wedding license, just in case you don't believe me. Here, you can look at it.
Take it easy, Cora. We believe you're his wife, Mrs. Starnes.
And he's got a birthmark?
We said we believe you. Now, what do you want?
Well, what does any good woman want? My husband.
And why come here?
Where else would I go?
I'm afraid we don't understand. Do we, Cora?
No.
I'm afraid you do.
Now, look here.
I'm afraid you understand awful well. Elliot told me.
Told you what?
What you two were doing. He also told me if he should fail to come home after a couple of
days... Mrs. Starnes, we haven't seen your husband for 7 years.
Now, you don't expect me to believe that, do you?
I don't see why not.
I do. You see, Mr. Devers, the other day, with my own eyes, I seen Elliot walk into this house. but I didn't see him walk out again. What's the matter, Mr. Davis? You got nothing to say?
But what do you want, Mrs. Starnes?
My husband, of course. Only since you killed him, I can't very well have that, can I?
What?
He's the only man I ever loved, and you killed him. I never should have let him come here. For days, I begged him not to.
Mrs. Starnes...
I made a mistake letting him come here. I know that now. But I want him back. I love him, and I want Elliot back.
Do you want your husband, Mrs. Starnes? Or a substantial sum of money?
Huh?
How much?
How can you talk about money at a time like this?
5,000.
I loved my husband, Mr. Deaver.
7,500. Well, how much?
25,000.
What?
In cash.
Mark.
Let me handle this, Cora. And if we refuse?
Well, then I'll just naturally have to tell my story to the police.
Mark.
Cora.
But you...
Oh, let's drop all the small talk, Mr. Devers. I want 25,000 and I want it fast. Now make up your mind.
I'll make up
now,
my mind.
Now, Mr. Devers, don't get rough. I'm not as dumb as my ex-husband. I've taken steps against anything happening to me.
No, Mark.
Better listen to her.
You're not getting away with this.
Then you don't get away with Elliot's murder.
So help me,
Mark. Before you put that hand on me, you better have your lady friend look out that window.
What?
There's a taxi across the street, Mark.
My taxi. And the driver knows I'm in here. You'd have to kill him, too. Elliot's ever-loving second wife is here to stay. If you want to get her out of your life, the cost is going to be $25,000. By this time tomorrow night.
After she left, I had some work to do on Cora.
It won't be the same way, Mark. Not another murder.
Who said anything like that?
Promise me? Not the same way.
Sure, sure, promise. After all, if we can get away with $25,000, is that so bad?
I'd rather settle for none of it.
Huh?
That money won't do us any good now.
Why not?
It just won't.
Oh, you're all upset. You'll feel differently day after tomorrow when you sign those papers in the insurance office and they hand that fat check over to you.
No, Mark. I'll never feel differently about it again.
I knew I couldn't work Cora my way much longer. But it was just two more days. Two more days to get that 50,000. Just two things to settle in just 2 days. First, there was Mrs. Starnes. When she came to my apartment the next night, I handed the envelope over to her.
It's all here?
You can open the envelope and count it if you like.
I don't have to, do I?
And what if I cheated you?
You wouldn't. I could always come back.
You could always come back for more anyway.
What do you think I am?
Doesn't make any difference now what I think.
Okay. No hard feelings.
There are, but they won't bother me for long.
Of course not. That money you're collecting will cure that.
I'll be cured before then.
That's your business.
It's yours, too, now.
I don't see how.
Now, do you see?
Put that knife down.
I will. Into you.
No. Don't. Please!
That door's locked. You can't get out.
Don't! You can have the money back.
There isn't any money in that envelope.
What?
Just strips of newspaper. Where can I get $25,000?
I don't care about the money.
I do. I cared about it for 7 years. Cared enough to murder once, and I can do it again. Now, Mrs. Starn, I've no hard feelings towards you. None at all. Just two things to take care of in just 2 days. The first, Mrs. Starnes was taken care of, and the second was now just an hour away. The 50,000 was waiting in the insurance office for Cora. All she had to do was sign her name on some papers to get it. Oh, you can imagine how relieved I was as I sat next to Cora when she drove to the insurance office. But it was different with Cora. Cora didn't say a word.
There's nothing left to say, Mark.
Oh, money will make you talk, Cora. You wait and see. After you get your hands on the... Hey, you're taking the wrong street.
No, Mark.
Sure you are. This is the way.
It's the only way left for us, Mark.
Huh?
We're driving straight out of town. We're never coming back. There'll be no more murders.
Cora.
I know you killed that woman.
Now, where did you ever get that idea? I paid her and she left.
I was outside your apartment house last night.
All right. So you know now. What did you expect? I couldn't let it all go down the drain, not after 7 years. Turn the car around.
No.
You're going to sign those papers. I want that money.
It's too late, Mark.
Like fun it is.
Let go.
You're turning this car around.
Mark, the wheel. Let go.
I wasn't even scratched in the crash. Cora wasn't that lucky. I rushed her here to the hospital. And you heard what the doctor said.
There's a chance. Only a small one, but still a chance.
No, the doctor doesn't understand. There's got to be more than only one small chance. I was 1 hour away from that $50,000. Money that belongs to me, money that I've waited 7 years for, and I won't be cheated out of it. Cora's got to live. She's got to sign those papers. Well, Doctor?
There's someone waiting for you down the corridor, Mr. Devils.
What about Cora? There's still a chance, isn't there?
No chance at all anymore.
You're lying.
The gentleman is waiting.
You're lying. She's not dead. She can't be.
The gentleman is from the police. She asked me to call.
It's a lie. She's not dead.
Mr. Devers, try to understand. She is...
No! It's not true, and I won't listen to you. She's got to sign those papers. You've only got to keep her alive another hour. You're a doctor. You can do that.
Mr. Devers,
seven
please.
7 years. Don't you understand? Oh, I can't let 7 years go down the drain. 7 years. It can't turn out that way. No. She's not dead.
So Mark's 50,000 went down the drain after all. And Mark went down the hatch of a scaffold. You know, I can't feel sorry for Mrs. Starnes. She should have known that a rolling widow gathers only mausoleum. Yes, sir, when you use a dead husband for blackmail, you're bound to end up face down. Oh, a footnote. When you're dealing with life insurance, remember, honesty is the best policy.
Well, friends, it's time once again to close that creaking door. Until next week at this same time, when we'll be back with a little hunk of horror. You'll be sure to listen, won't you? Until next week, then. Good night. Pleasant dreams.
Things people do for money is just killer. I wonder if it's an epidemic of ghastly proportions. Excuse my attempt at playing the role of Raymond. I just get sucked into the whole thing way too easily. These Inner Sanctum programs have a way of making you feel scared even when the story isn't that scary. Today's episode was first heard on the airwaves July 13th, 1952. That makes it almost exactly 67 years old. Is that amazing or what? In our next segment, we travel a bit further back in time to July of 1943. Let's go. The date is July 7th, 1943, and this is A Moment in Time. What you're about to hear is a section from that morning's World News Today broadcast. Imagine yourself getting up and switching on the radio. You sit down in your favorite chair, drinking that much-needed cup of coffee as you listen to today's news.
World News Today, brought to you by Continental Radio and Television Corporation, makers of Admiral Radio, America's smart set. By shortwave broadcast, direct from important overseas stations, as well as the leading news centers of our own country, CBS correspondents are waiting to bring you a complete report from the world's political and battlefronts. But first, here's Doug Edwards.
The top news today, Allied air action. British and American planes have showered tons of bombs on enemy targets in Western Europe, in the Mediterranean, in the South Pacific, and in China. The RAF put on the biggest show with a record attack on Hamburg. Other Allied bombers flying the shuttle route from Britain to Africa blasted Italy's northwest coastal port of Leghorn. On land, the Sicilian campaign has reached its final stages with the capture of Trapani by the American 7th Army. And in Russia, the Soviet tide rolls on toward Orel. Now, Admiral Radio takes you direct to Algiers. John Daly reporting.
Tonight, and it's already nighttime in this part of the world, the armies of the United Nations are massing for the final battle of Sicily. The Axis is holding a line some 70 miles long, running from below Catania on Sicily's east coast, inland for about 15 miles, and then arcing around Mount Etna to the northwest through Rigo Buto. From there, it turns north to enter the Tyrrhenian Sea on Sicily's north coast. The Germans hold more than 30 miles of it, from Catania to Rigo Buto. The Italians hold the rest, the 30-mile stretch northward to the Tyrrhenian Sea. In western Sicily, the American 7th Army has occupied Trapani, the last port of any consequence on the west coast, and has captured an additional 10,000 prisoners and a huge amount of booty, including 200 guns. The work of our American 7th Army has been magnificent. The brilliantly executed three-pronged attack which captured Como, Sicily's capital, last Thursday, split the Axis armies and forced them to the last stand in the Mount Etna line on the final great battle which is now underway. Beside me is Charles Court, photographer for Acme News Pictures, who has followed the 7th Army since Invasion Day and was one of the first Americans to go into Palermo. What was the siege of Palermo like, Charlie?
There wasn't really any siege. As we came up to the outskirts of the city, we were met by thousands of poor, tattered peasants carrying white flags of surrender. And as we could see hundreds of white flags on the buildings lining Via Roma, running into Palermo, people cheered and called us conquerors and liberators. And as they had in every village and town in Sicily, offered us wine and fruit. We moved out of the suburbs and started for the city. A German manned 88 opened fire on a lead armored car. It hit the car, but nobody was hurt badly. And then came the only fight I saw. A couple of our self-propelled guns moved out and cleaned out that 88. And how they cleaned it out. A few minutes later, another 88 fired at us, and the boys cleaned them up. In all, we used from 6 to 8 shells to clean out those guns and capture Palermo.
Do you mean the Italians didn't fight at all in the city?
Yes. After the 88s had been wiped out, General Geoffrey Keyes, who was in command, went into Palermo in an armored car under a flag of truce, taken with him Italian General Molinari, who had been captured earlier. They went to the royal palace in search of the commander of the Palermo garrison, but like all good fascists, he had flown the coup. Another unit captured him later. General Keyes demanded that Molinari take responsibility for the unconditional surrender of the city. And he added, if it wasn't given, we'd slug it out. That's all there was to it.
But what about the people of the city?
I was in the jeep right behind General Keyes' car when he went in to find the garrison commander. And even then, the people were forcing food and wine on us. One of them forced so hard and was so excited that an overripe melon landed right in General Keyes' lap. In the city, people danced in the streets, and one man waved a huge American flag he'd brought back from a visit to America and asked everyone if they were from Brooklyn. Another guy was shouting, "Welcome to Americans. They bring us liberty and food." Everywhere in Sicily, the people were hungry. One GI said in Palermo, "Christ, we could take Italy with a case of pay rations." That's a little optimistic, but when we saw the defenses in Palermo and realized that if they had been manned, it would have been very tough going, it made sense.
Well, why do you think they quit so easily?
I figure it was partly hunger, but more important, they had been told by the fascists that we had no army. When they saw our tank destroyers, armored cars, pause on the road for miles on the approaches to the city, they just quit.
Well, you must have gotten some great pictures, Charlie.
Yes, I did. And the best part of it is that they're in the States now. I worked all last night with Captain Jack Smith of the Army Pictorial Service, who used to be a news photographer himself, and radio telephoto the pictures home.
So did you lack subjects?
No. Everybody in Palermo seemed to have relatives in Chicago or Brooklyn. And they all wanted to have their pictures taken so that their relatives could see them.
Thanks, Charlie. We return you now to CBS in New York.
More news in just a moment. But first, here's Warren Sweeney with a word from Admiral Radio.
As read by Amazing Stories, read by Amazing People.
This time on As Read By, we have a story sent in by Mitch M. from Raleigh, North Carolina. Mitch says, I really enjoy the show. I drive up to 2,500 miles per week. Ron's Amazing Stories helps pass the long, boring times behind the wheel, seeing the same old along I-95, I-85, and I-75, with a bit of I-10 and I-40 thrown in. I enjoy the stories submitted by other listeners and thought that I would contribute my own. This is 100% true as to how I remember it happening 28 years ago. It truly changed my life. Mitch. In the late 1980s, I had no money, but was full of lust for adventure and had always been game for what most people would consider a bad idea. My friend Chris and I had heard of a big party that was to take place in an undeveloped neighborhood not too far from Chris's house. Neither of us had a car, but I had a moped that I had purchased in poor condition. With a little help of a $13 repair manual and some luck, I got it running into fairly reliable condition. I rode the 14-mile trip to Chris's house one Friday night, and we made the plan to head out to the party as soon as his parents were asleep. After relieving Chris's dad of a bit of 2-cycle oil gas and topping off the moped, we waited in the detached garage until the light in his parents' room went out. We pushed the moped up the long gravel driveway and a few hundred feet down the road before starting her up. We headed into the night with visions of good times and fast girls flashing through our heads. We did not know exactly where the party was going to be. We just had a good idea. So we turned into the development and found that it was really dark. No street lights or anything. You'd think we'd realize then and there were no cars or any other vehicles going in and out of the development. But while we were strong in our sense of adventure, we both severely lacked common sense. After tooling around the vacant streets of the development for a bit, we happened down a long, winding paved road. After seeing what we thought was a slight reflection, was then a blinding light. 6 sheriff's deputies in 3 cars, all shining various types of light on us. Gripping the handbrake as hard as I could, I came to stop with Chris's weight slamming into me from the back seat. Exercising perfected lying abilities, we told the officers that I was showing Chris my new moped. Somehow, we managed to talk ourselves out of the situation, answering the deputies' multitude of questions. It was like carefully peeling our way out of a briar's patch. After making our way out of the development, we decided Chris's house was not where we wanted to spend our evening. So we decided to head to our other hangout, the bowling alley. So with Chris on the back, we headed off into the night at about 28 miles per hour. Now, it is important to mention at this point that while it was not illegal at the time, neither of us were wearing helmets. A couple miles down the road, we began being passed by cars occupied with other teenagers that had apparently met the same fate we did in the dark development. Some of them were in a particularly bad mood. One blue Camaro, in fact, decided to give us a little nudge off the road, and this is where the meat of the story begins. The memory of the crash is fuzzy. We went off the road into a gravel shoulder. The front tire struck a rut, and I threw both my arms out in front of me as I went over the handlebars. Chris followed right after at the same velocity. My head hit some concrete or asphalt that had crumbled from the road's edge, and about a split second later, Chris landed on me. I began to fall. It wasn't like a skydiver would experience, but it was faster than a feather slowly drifting down to the ground. As I looked around me, I saw something that I could only describe as gold-laced black fire. The golden tip flame was all around me. It seemed to come from nowhere and rising around me like towering mesas. As I continued to fall, I heard echoing laughter and screams. I could not see where the strange noises were coming from, but I could hear them vividly. Finally, I landed on a purplish-gray flat spot. I was surrounded by black coral jagged stalagmites. It was hard to make them out, and there were bits of mica in them reflecting the faint light of the gold-tipped black flames. The screams and laughter were much louder here. I found myself sitting on what looked like a stone bench or maybe an altar. I began looking around, unsure of how I became seated here. Ahead of me in the darkness was a large door. The door seemed to travel up into the flames above. The air was bitterly cold, and I shivered. I then realized I was both naked and unable to move. The screams and laughter slowly started to unify into a chant. He is coming. I tried again to move. More screams, more laughter. He is coming. I started to struggle, and the chants became more unified. He is coming. And then I started to scream, no! The unified voices screamed back. He is coming! At that point, the giant door before me swung open, and I woke up in the back of an ambulance. Chris and the paramedics were looking at me and asking if I was okay. My hands were scraped and bloody where they hit the gravel. My head hurt so bad that I couldn't see straight. The paramedics have patched me up with a bandage, but the blood in my hair had hardened and it itched. When my mother picked me up from the hospital later, I apologized how I acted in the recent past. I also admitted to a few other indiscretions. I had reached a turning point in my life that night. I truly felt like I saw hell, and to this day, I've tried to make sure I will never see it again. I hope you liked my story. It is 100% true from the late 1980s. Mitch in Raleigh, North Carolina. I did like your story. It is incredible, and more to the point, I'm glad that you survived the accident. These types of stories are very rare. I think part of the reason for this is that they are personal. I thank you, Mitch, for sharing this one with us. To everyone else, do you want to know how Mitch shared his story? He went to ronsamazingstories.com, clicked on the comment tab, and started typing. That's it. So now you are in the know, and I know you want to do the same thing to share your story. Head to ronsamazingstories.com and get started today. Okay, we have a lot of people to thank for this episode. First, thank you, Mitch, for your great story. Also, Jim Harold, for taking part in the skit from the open. You're the best. And a big thanks to everyone that sent in a vote for the 5-Minute Mystery Program. And a final thank you to the listeners. You are why we do this. If you want to keep up with what's happening on Ron's Amazing Stories, please follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or sign up for the weekly newsletter. All of the links you'll need and access to the blog can be found at ronsamazingstories.com. Thank you for listening, and I hope you come again to find out what are Ron's Amazing Stories.
All of the vintage audio used in the podcast is believed to be in the public domain. Ron's Amazing Stories does not own the rights to any of the old-time radio used here. If you hold the rights to any of the shows played, please contact us immediately at ronsamazingstories.com.